You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And it is the 8 o'clock hour on a Friday, and that means Pat Kerwin, he of NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, weekdays 3 to 7. On Sundays during the season, he's part of CBS's NFL Today show. Pat joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, all points in between. Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. Pat, you should be thankful for Miller and Moulton. Do you know why?
Well, I am thankful, but I don't have to know why.
Because finally, see, we feel that our influence on you and all the people you talk to in the league, that the league is finally becoming the league that Miller and Moulton have always wanted. How about all these trades?
Well, that's right up your alley. It is like every one of them is a Christmas present to you under the tree.
But these Miller and Moulton, and Mark has even said it, we like deals that are win-win, that make sense for both sides. The deals that took place yesterday, I mean, two starting quarterbacks from last year got traded. A terrific wide receiver gets traded overnight. But these seem like just good, solid trades.
All right. Well, then Mark's the mediator here. Mark, his expression he used was win-win. Tell me how the Chargers won letting Keenan Allen go for a fourth.
Well, that's a salary cap dump, and you know this is just picking up salary, and obviously Keenan Allen wouldn't renegotiate his contract. I don't know how he's only worth a fourth if it's not for the money, Pat.
It's the fact. It's the money, and that's what happens when you get bound down by contracts and you can't. Look, what are we doing? We're cutting guys, we're keeping guys, we're signing guys. One of those three boxes is for everyone, but the Chargers did not win in this. Think about Mike Williams is gone. Now Keenan Allen is gone. And they decided to dump the receivers and keep their pass rushers. We'll see. You know, those receivers, the quarterback kind of is pretty good. And you're just taking those two guys off the field.
I wonder if they would rethink the Mike Williams move, because they clearly thought they'd be able to restructure with Keenan Allen. And then he says no. I'm wondering if they had it to do over again. Do they keep Mike Williams, who's 3 years younger or 2 years younger than Keenan Allen? All right. And, you know, this way they would have had at least one of those wideouts. But it's an interesting
Mike's still available, too. And we've seen this before. A lot of teams will cut guys and then go re-sign them.
Right.
And maybe they will, because he's one of the better names still left on the free agent wide receiver list.
Well, but also what's interesting to me about this move, Pat, is that they just picked up a 32-year-old wide receiver. Now, granted, he's very good, but he's 32. So in theory, he's got, what, 1 to 2 more years at the level he's at now? That, to me, is also the Bears front office saying, we think we can win now.
I don't think they think that. I think they think we better try to win now. That's what I think they think. And there's a big difference. Well, what is the first thing that tells you? All that nonsense about Marvin Harrison, that just went out the window. Don't you think? Oh, you got more. You got this guy. You know, move on. We're going to take a quarterback. And now, how does Justin Fields feel?
He's begging.
He's begging to start and begging to stay, Pat.
I'm going to have him stay. He's going to start the season while I don't put the kid out on the field like they do with all their quarterbacks and ruin them. And right before the trading deadline, after he's thrown 300 yards 2 or 3 times, I'm going to trade him for a third to someone who lost their starting quarterback. His value then is going to be way more than it is now. He can't get anything now. Not after Mac Jones went for a sixth. You know, I saw the last time I brought that up, Mark waved his hand at me like, that's disgusting, just because I said he was in the Pro Bowl.
Well, yeah,
there he goes again.
The Pro Bowl does nothing for me, Pat, and you know that.
That's why I say it. You know, sometimes I think unless I spark you and get you going, we don't have any action here. How about Chase Young, fellas? How shocked is he? Yeah, no, I'm not. He hasn't done anything, and now he's walking around trying to get visits. Visits is a very bad thing, and I see Jadavian's on to his second visit. That means no offer at the first one. Yeah, it's visit season for a lot of guys, and I feel bad for him, but that's how it works. Can anyone of the three of us, because I can't, so it's down to you two, explain the Dallas Cowboys?
Is it the Dak contract that's holding them back from doing anything, Pat?
Yeah. And Stephen's now defending it. Did you see Stephen's quotes? I love those. All in doesn't mean free agency, you know. I love Stephen. Protecting his dad. Good boy.
Well, and then never mind the fact that there's also now an off-the-field matter involving Dak, which might actually become something. We shall see. But, Pat, how in the world could they not? I mean, it's not like this $59.4 million cap hit was coming as a surprise here. Plus, they've had a few weeks to work on this. I mean, how can they not get this done? This is organizational malpractice.
And they're defending it. They're not sitting here saying, you know, we just can't get this done. We're trying. They're defending their philosophy right now of let's stay quiet and let's not do anything. Now, that being said, you know, I try to update this free agent list every day because it changes so fast. But there's an awful lot of guys out there that are one-year contract minimum wage guys now. And some of them have big names. Xavier Howard's out there. Quadre Diggs out there. Justin Simmons is out there. Their own left tackle's out there. If you need to get a backup quarterback, Tannehill's out there. There's a bunch of guys.
Well, in the Cowboys case,
Kevin Zeitler.
Right, I was just going to say, in the Cowboys case, like Zeitler couldn't walk in today and be a starting lineman, and it looks as if you'll be able to get him for what? 5, 6, 8? I mean, come on.
No, you can get – now you can go get guys – I said it to you guys the other day. This is the Bill Belichick method before Stephon Gilmore. He never went into free agency until after 2 weeks. Now, the way we're signing and the acceleration of one-year deals, when you get to 100 one-year deals in the first 5 days, free agency's over. All the names I just mentioned, you can pick them all up on one-year deals cheap.
So basically the rest of free agency, I mean, if you get a two-year deal from this point on, you better go kiss the ring of your agent is basically what you're telling me, Pat.
Yes. And, you know, so we had a couple two-year deals last night, and I always keep my eye on that. And some of them are funny money. Cedric Wilson, New Orleans. New Orleans has to spread whatever they're giving them out. That's a two. Deshaun Elliott, that was the other day. There's a two. Yeah, it's kind of like one year all over the place. And the players have no leverage. Because here's what the GMs want to do. They want this to go away so they can go back to draft preparation. They don't want to be doing this overnight, all day, everything else. And they're not in their draft room. And I can remember the anxiety of this. You got your whole scouting staff is in there now working on the draft board. And it's big, long arguments and discussions. And let's watch the guy again. And maybe he's pick number 29, not 49. You know, all this is going on, except the GM and the scouting directors are being called out of that room and basically come in here. We can get this guy right now. It's a four-year deal. Oh, no, make it a three. We can't do a four. All that stuff's going on. So they want to go back to the draft. That's really what they want to do. Because here come the pro days. And those guys want to get on planes and go to pro days, which I think is a waste of time.
Have the Bills and the Dolphins had the same week, Pat, where they, for cap reasons, both had to let 8, 9 guys go? And they've replaced them. And some of the guys they brought in are good. But they've let more walk out the door than they brought back, haven't they?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say you can't go by the volume of the signings. Miami's a good example here. And I don't feel like bashing them every day, but we asked the guy yesterday, you listed every guy you signed like they're great and they're all journeymen. And I asked him, who's going to replace Wilkins talent for talent, even Raekwon Davis talent for talent? And it was no answer. So, yeah, you can sign a lot of guys, but I'll agree with you, not so much with Buffalo, but I will with our friends down in South Florida, that those guys probably got worse. Not by a lot, but they got worse.
But Buffalo certainly didn't get better, did they, Pat?
I think I'm just stacking them up against Miami.
Okay.
Because that was really how the question was posed. If you just said, do I think they did great? No, I think they did better than Miami.
Okay, but I think that they both, I think Buffalo's roster was better Monday morning than it is now was my point. That they both had to do what they had to do for cap reasons, made some tough calls, let some guys go, the Bills with both safeties, etc. And they'll replace them. And some of the guys they'll bring in are pretty good. Like, you know, let's just say the Bills signed Curtis Samuel yesterday. Gabe Davis or Curtis Samuel? If all things were even, who would you rather have?
Samuel.
Interesting. Okay. I'd rather have Davis.
I told you my description. No, here's the Buffalo description of Gabe Davis, and I've said this to you before. Some days you can't take your eyes off him, and the other days you can't find him on the field. He's a hot and cold guy. Curtis Samuel's big, physical guy. I much prefer him.
Okay. Fair enough.
We all remember Gabe in the back of the end zone in a playoff game catching two touchdowns.
Yeah, against the Chiefs, looking like a number one receiver, yes.
Yeah, and then the next week you couldn't find him on the field. You know, that's who he is. So I'm not a big fan. I think he's a three, and he's supposed to catch the ball. That's his job, catch the damn ball from a quarterback that knows how to throw.
How much better are the Eagles?
How much better are the Eagles? I think Saquon's going to be a factor. He's a receiving fool now. And when you want to feature him in that part of it, he's going to make Jalen better. The run game will be better, and the receiving out of the backfield stuff will help for the, you know, just get the young guy, the quarterback, to understand the check down game, and he'll be fine. So I think they are better there. I think, you know, some of their signs, you know, kind of like the Brandon Graham, that's just a courtesy one. They've got a couple of pass rushers. They probably could move a guy or two right now, and they're good at doing that. Yeah, I think they're better. And while the Dallas Cowboys are their main competition, they're not doing anything, and they need to. So I think Philadelphia nudged themselves right up against Dallas.
Well, and I think the Jets have missed a golden opportunity in the East with Buffalo and Miami having to retool on the fly here. And the Jets, I mean, 10 seconds, Pat, are the Jets the better, same, or worse than they were when the week started?
Well, it depends if a guy becomes vice president or not. That's
you just can't set, you know, we played Johnny Carson there and he was, you know, Rickles sitting on the chair. We couldn't just set that one up any better. For Pat Kerwin, NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, weekdays 3 to 7. Sundays during the season, CBS's NFL Today Show. Pat joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers. Pinchers, Tampa, Key West, over a dozen locations in between. Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. More with Pat after this.
Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour, our remaining moments. With Pat Kerwin, NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, CBS's NFL Today Show. Pat joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers. Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. All right. Do you like what the Packers have done this week?
Yeah, starting with your giant. Yeah. And I talked to McKinney after he signed, and he was extremely excited. And I think this is always an important piece to me. When you go to a team with history, generational history, and the Packers are one of those teams where they get excited about going there. They all imagine what it's like to play in the stadium. He was talking about the kids riding them on the bikes over to practice. All the historical parts to being a Packer make the contract's good too, but makes the whole thing exciting. I know from signing guys when we weren't very good, but we were offering a little bit more money than the next team and they would take it. They didn't come enthused. They just came and it was a problem. I would never do it again that way. But when you're going to the Packers, you are really going to a place that kids dream about when they're growing up. So, yeah, I think I like them. I'll tell you who I like. I like a division and I like the team in the division. I like Houston and I like the South. Of the AFC. That thing is going to be good for a long time.
Why? I mean, quite frankly, why is it that a division
they
that's
had cap space and quarterbacks? And Houston had both. And when that kid came into Houston, we've had this conversation before, but when you look at that thing and the way they're built, and then the internal warfare, Calvin Ridley, that made me laugh for about an hour. Oh, no, he's going right back at 4 o'clock because then they don't have to give anything but a 3. Whoops, he's going to Tennessee. $50 million guaranteed. So they have money. They have young quarterbacks. And they all know that they have to fear each other. It's not a division with two teams that are deadwood. They're going to be pretty good for a long time.
Although two of the young quarterbacks we're still unsure of, though, obviously.
Correct.
Since only played 4 games, and Will Levis, you know, he had moments, and he had moments last year. So, you know, that's still up in the air, though. That's fair, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But he's a first-round pick with talent. They all have young quarterbacks, and they all have cap space. And they're very aggressive right now. And Houston's killing it. And Nick's done a nice job of positioning himself to put this roster together. Now it's pretty dangerous. So I kind of like the South. And I say it because I thought the South was awful. I'm sure you guys thought it was awful.
Sure.
And it's not anymore.
The other South was pretty awful. How good did Atlanta get? And what is their ceiling? Because at the end of the day, they spent all this money on Cousins. I don't think it makes them a Super Bowl contender. David says they're closer than I think. What do you think, Pat?
I don't think they're Super Bowl contenders. But let's start with Cousins. What would give anyone the right to say he's a Super Bowl quarterback? He's never done that. So I do like that they got him, though. They had to do something to stay up with, you know, Baker and Carr and everything else. It's not hard to stay up with those quarterbacks, but you better get one. So I think they'll be better. But I got to – here's another team I like, Tampa Bay. And getting a chance to talk to Levante David yesterday was always fun, and he's interesting. But that coach, one of the most underrated coaches in the league, players like to play for him. Look how well they did keeping their own. And they were good enough to win the division last year. Why wouldn't I think they couldn't do it again?
Well, that's what I think has changed dramatically about the two Southern divisions, is that we looked at them from afar last year and we said, well, they're one playoff team divisions and the one division's awful. That division's gotten so much better so quickly. And now, quite frankly, in the NFC, Pat, you could see where two playoff teams could come out of the NFC South.
Yeah. And I I've been around trying to do this. It's hard to build teams. The two Souths, as you like to call it, I think have done a nice job, and they're going to be around in the middle of this race all the way. I hope Baker doesn't go backfire on everybody. You know, he did a lot last year. And, of course, if he does, everyone's going to say, we saw this coming. He is who he is. That chapter's been written. They just can't wait to print it. But I think he's better than that.
And Tampa Bay fans are certainly hoping that he is. With he and Evans back, it is interesting. After Cousins signed with Atlanta, the number of Bucks fans that were texting this show, Pat, saying, hey, we beat Cousins last year when he was in Minnesota. Don't understand why we can't beat him again. The Bucks fan doesn't feel threatened at all by Atlanta, and I love their confidence in Baker and Evans in the bunch.
Yeah, and Levante signed back, and you know, when you talk to him, you realize how old he is. And then you look at the defensive roster. We were making this point yesterday. 8 of the starters are from the draft class of 2021, 22, and 23. Now, those cats were like 9, 10, and 11 when Levante signed with the Bucks out of college.
Levante David's first year was Rondé Barber's last. Okay, so the lineage, you know, continues. Hey, Hollywood Brown signing with the Chiefs overnight. $7 million, could be up to $11 million. Is he a 2 or is he a flashy 3?
I think everyone thought he was going to be a 1. He's not. When he said he was going to leave, I laughed. Baltimore, because he didn't like the offense. Remember that?
Right.
He never got in Arizona the number of targets he got in Baltimore. So what was he talking about? He had over 100 targets his last year in Baltimore. So he thinks he's a 1, which he's not. To me, the way they're built with Mahomes, he doesn't have to be the 1. Now, the question I would challenge myself to answer is he better than Rice, the kid who kind of emerged for them? My answer to that is no. So he's the 3 because the tight end's the 1.
What do you make of Derrick Henry in Baltimore? How do you think this works out, and how much better does this make them?
I like Derrick. Derrick has enough gas left in the tank for this year, maybe next year. You got to be smart using him, though. You can't just keep doing what you've been doing in Tennessee with him. He can't handle that workload anymore. And I talked to Sean Alexander about this about a month ago, because Sean's the great. I said, call Sean, get us Sean Alexander, because he hit the wall when they tried to run him into the ground. And when he hit the wall, it was over on the spot. I think they'll be smart with Derek. The thing about when I go to Baltimore, there's such a rich history of physicality. When you go there, you feel it on both sides of the ball. When you watch them practice, the offense wants to be as physical as the defense, and this guy's going to give him that presence.
Did the Seahawks pull off a sneaky, terrific trade? Or is this just cute, but it's not going to amount to much? Getting Sam Howell for a couple of pick swaps.
I think it's a good move by them. I'll start with he's better than Drew Lock. He was battle-tested by like nobody in the NFL last year. And he had to deal with a coach who kept throwing the ball and they couldn't block anybody and he was getting wailed on. So he's already passed the test of toughness. He's a very good runner. And he probably would enjoy a little rest after what he went through. So I do like it for them. And I do think when Geno's done, probably in 2 years, that he will be a legitimate candidate, for the job. I don't know if he'll win it, but I like the move. I also like, didn't they just go out and grab the linebacker from Buffalo?
I'm not sure.
I think they did.
Taking your word on that.
I think they did. Tyrell Dotson. Yeah, he gotcha. Did.
Okay.
That's the guy that they said up in Buffalo, take it easy, Edmonds. We can play without you. And everyone thought that was crazy. And that kid, he had those 75, 80 tackles. And that's because I'm on the word sneaky. I think they snuck up and got themselves a pretty good linebacker.
They're a sneaky good team, and yet they may only be the third best team in that division. He's Pat Kerwin. NFL Radio's Moving the Chains. Give it a listen with Jim Miller weekdays 3 to 7. And Pat's appearances are brought to you by Pinchers. Pinchers with locations from Tampa to Key West and a dozen in between. Pinchers where you can't fake fresh. Pat, have a great weekend. Thanks for your time and your insight.
Oh, it's great always talking to you guys. Take care. Enjoy your weekend. And good luck with that babysitting there, David.
Thank you, Pat.
You'll do great.
Bracket Dom is next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes until the top of the hour, our final segment along the network. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. He is the number one rated bracketologist in the country. He is Bracket Dom. You can follow him on X at Bracket Dom, and you can see his work at Bracketometry, bracketometry.com. Dom, it's David and Mark. Thanks for doing this. Good morning. How are you?
Absolutely. Appreciate it. You're doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Well, we are great. We've got a lot of questions for you in a short period of time. So right now, Dayton's loss in the A-10 costs somebody a bid. Who's your first team out?
So right now, I think that's probably going to be Texas A&M. I might have still had them as my last team in, if not for that. But now it's looking more and more like they're going to have to get that win versus Kentucky to be on the right side of the bubble today.
All right, Dom. I'm a guy that loves the mid-majors. I'm looking at your first four out. The first team I see is Indiana State. That pains me because their net's high enough. What is it that keeps Indiana State out? And does it take a NC State beating Virginia to get them back in?
Yeah, if NC State beat Virginia, Virginia could absolutely get pushed out of this field. Really hurt them that NC State pulled that upset over Duke. If Duke had won that, I think Virginia would probably be fine regardless. But yeah, if that were to happen, Indiana State might still have a chance. Yesterday was not a good day for them. It seemed like every single team that was right there on the bubble that needed a win got that win. Indiana State, you're right, their net is fantastic. But the committee really isn't looking at what a team's individual net is. That means a lot more for evaluating wins. So, like, Indiana State being so high, that's actually bigger for teams who beat them than Indiana State themselves. Their actual metrics are kind of more towards the 40s and they really just don't have that many quality wins. Their only win versus someone versus that's in the field is Drake, and they beat them one out of three tries, and their only Q1 win is at Bradley. I just don't know if that's going to quite be enough, even though they've been such a fun story this year.
All right. Can Ohio State, can NC State, can Oregon make it to their conference finals and get in, or do they have to run the table? I mean, Dom, Ohio State in theory could beat, what, Illinois and Nebraska to get to the Big Ten final? I mean, wouldn't that get them in?
I think it actually, of those three, that's the one that I think people aren't talking about that could potentially sneak themselves in. Now, the only argument against them is just that the committee doesn't always put a ton of weight on these conference tournaments in terms of the bubble and what teams are going to be in and what teams are going to be out. We saw Texas A&M make a huge run in the SEC tournament a couple years ago and look like they put themselves into the field and still not be left in because it was just too little too late in their eyes. The committee had already started meeting, putting everything together. Ohio State might fall victim to that as well. But their resume would certainly look like that of a tournament team if they were to make it. The other two teams you mentioned think they got to win the whole thing to be able to get in, and they would just be bid thieves.
All right, New Mexico you have in. How sure are you on the Lobos making it?
I'm feeling a lot better after their win last night. Now, like I said, they were certainly not the only bubble team to have a good day yesterday. If you had asked me at the start of the week, they beat Boise, are they in? I would have said almost certainly. I'm still leaning towards them being in at this point, but that bubble is so competitive that their bad non-conference strength of schedule and their Q4 loss still could potentially leave them out if they don't beat Colorado State today. I think they're in, but I'd still be sweating if I were them if I don't get a win today as well.
Who lost yesterday that we can cross out now that you think, yeah, they're out?
Yes. So I would say for sure Villanova with that tight loss to Marquette. They needed that one to be in. Wake Forest lost to Pitt. That was pretty much a bubble elimination game. Wake Forest is out, and same thing with Ohio State and Iowa. That was a bubble elimination game as well. With Iowa taking the loss there, I can't see them making it either. And last one would be Kansas State. With their loss to Iowa State, they needed that to get on the right side of the bubble as well.
How good is Iowa State?
I think Iowa State is fantastic. Now, I think they might also be upset prone, potentially, just because they like to play kind of a slow, grinded out style that you get a mid-major that shoots a bunch of threes. They could be an early upset team, but they also match fantastically against the top teams in the country as well. So this is a team that we could be talking about losing round one or making the Final Four, and neither would surprise me, but they are a good team.
Bracket Dom, not only is he the most accurate bracketologist last year, 67 of the 68 teams he had seeded within one line of where it is they ended up. Bracket Dom is how you follow him on X, Bracket D-O-M. All right, you know, I left out Providence. Are they in that Ohio State, you know, Pitt, you know, jumble? Can they, if they get to the Big East final and lose, are the Friars in?
See, I would say they're a little bit closer than that Ohio State jumble. There's not even a 0% chance they lose today and still make it. That's how big yesterday's win was. I would say they're probably close. I mean, I had them in my next four out. If you look now, haven't updated since that result yesterday. I think Providence is probably in that first four out now, kind of with Texas A&M, Indiana State, to where if they get the right results, they could certainly sneak in. But yeah, I would say a win today would probably get them in. And even with a loss, they're going to be right there in the discussion.
Now, I know you have South Florida in. They've got to win the AAC to get into the tournament. Whose bid would that is that, they're no chance for an at-large. So they're stealing. That's a bid that could be there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And if FAU were to, I mean, FAU is going to be in regardless. If FAU wins the American tournament, thus knocking out South Florida or whoever else that bid thief would be, that would open up that extra spot that potentially Indiana State, Texas A&M, Providence, Pitt, one of those teams that I'm probably going to have just outside could potentially sneak themselves into the field without having to get another win today.
Okay, so you feel about FAU the way we all felt about Dayton. Dayton lost, but it's a bad loss, but they're in. If FAU were to lose today, Dom, if FAU were to lose today in the American quarters to North Texas, are they in enough where they could survive a loss today?
I believe they could. It's lucky for them that North Texas was the one that won that game, because the loss to them would only be a Q2 loss, which really, right now, if you just add one more Q2 loss to a resume, that isn't changing it by all that much to where I think they would fall completely out. I mean, is there a chance they could be in Dayton with a loss there? Perhaps. But I would be pretty surprised if they were left out of the field completely by losing to North Texas.
Colorado in, or do they have to beat Washington State today?
I think they're in. I think if they lost to Utah yesterday, that would have put them in a lot more trouble. But I think that probably was enough. Now, they're still in that range where, I mean, every year there's a team that is a surprise omission. And if they lose to Washington State, they're still in that range where they could be that surprise omission. So if they don't want to sweat it out, I would say win today. But I'm probably going to have them in my field regardless. So I do feel good about their chances.
Your one line right now is?
Oh, yes. Purdue, Houston, Connecticut. And before I say the fourth one, I'll say those three teams are one seed no matter what. And I do have Tennessee as my fourth one seed at the moment. Now, they're still in a tight race. North Carolina could certainly get that, and there's maybe even a chance Arizona could get it as well. But I think Tennessee is the one that controls their destiny to get that one seed. If they win the SEC tournament, they're getting it, and I think they're probably getting it even if they just beat Auburn and make the SEC championship.
Have we missed a storyline today? You know, like, is there a matchup? Is there a conference where, you know, a bid is up for grabs that we're not seeing? Or pretty much did the cement harden?
Yeah, I think there's definitely still teams that can play themselves in. Pittsburgh today played North Carolina. And Pittsburgh had such a horrible non-conference run to schedule. I still think they're out, even with that win against Wake Forest yesterday. But if you beat North Carolina today, that's going to make it really hard to continue leaving them out of the field. And the other ones that I think we already did mention, Texas A&M, if they beat Kentucky, I'm suddenly starting to like their chances. And like we said, Providence as well, if they get a win today, might be on the right side. So those are the three teams I'd really watch out for today. To get a win and potentially get in. I'm just not quite sure who they'd knock out yet. That's going to take some more figuring.
All right, two or three teams that won earlier in the week that are going to enter as 12s, 13s, or 14s, and we know it's all about matchups, but two or three teams that when you saw they won their conference tournament, you smiled and said, I'm probably going to be picking them in the first round.
Absolutely. Those are always the most fun teams to talk about. Well, first out of the gate, a team that was the darling of the early season. I look at James Madison. I mean, they were one of the last undefeateds in college basketball this year. Had that awesome win to start the year at Michigan State. Then in conference, they kind of fell off. I mean, not fell off, but they lost to Appalachian State two times, and everyone stopped talking about them. But they caught fire again, won the Sun Belt Tournament, and they're certainly a team that could go on a run. And then on top of that, looking at some of the other maybe even lower seeds, I really like Samford as well. They haven't really played anyone, so people aren't talking about them in terms of, oh, look what they've done. But they've certainly been just dominating every one of the games they have been playing. And I'm really curious to see if that carries over against a high-level team. But I think it will. They have the players to do it.
The number one ranked bracketologist in the country. He is Bracket Dom on X. That's D-O-M, bracket, Dom. You can see his work at bracketometry.com, bracketometry.com. Dom, thanks for making time for us, particularly at this hour. Good luck this weekend, and hopefully we can check in soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Great questions. Had a good time. Would love to be on again. So thank you so much, and enjoy the madness.
Bracket Dom. He not only got all the teams in last year's tournament, 67 of the 68 he had within one seed of where they ended up being seeded. Damn.
Couple of places where he has teams seeded a little differently than others that I just saw. Colgate as a 15 against, you know, he's got them set up against Baylor. I don't think anybody wants to see Colgate as a 15, David. I think they're better than that. But he's, this is what he does. And, you know, Grand Canyon has a 12. James Madison has a 12. He has South Florida as a 13 if they win the AAC. Has them playing Illinois as a 4.
By the way, Grand Canyon's got to win the WAC. All right, they're through to the semis. They got to buy straight to the semis. There's a very dangerous 3 seed in the WAC. They scored 109 points last night. Texas Arlington. I have a feeling they're going to win in the semis and play Grand Canyon in the finals. Just throwing that out there. But I'm with you. Everybody wants to see Grand Canyon, but, you know, they ain't getting an at-large. You know, McNeese State wasn't getting an at-large.
Right.
They had to win it.
Right. I'd love to have Dom on. He bummed me out when I see Indiana State as a team out.
I know.
But he has USF in. So, you know, he has the top-seeded team in the American in. A lot of people, when they do their brackets, don't think that they'll win that conference and have already omitted them from the tournament.
Right, like I think Shelby from bracketwag.com,
correct.
He does not, he has FAU because he has them as the highest ranked team in the American. He has the FAU, them in his bracket. He does not have South Florida. So South Florida would be a bid stealer for Shelby. Meanwhile, for Bracket Dom, okay, South Florida not winning the AAC would put Indiana State theoretically in.
Gosh, I can't wait for Selection Sunday. Are you guys going to watch it? I mean, David, I know you probably do, but Mark, no?
No. It's one of the worst television shows ever. I hate it.
I will say it's going to take a hit without Greg Gumbel hosting. I love Greg Gumbel.
Is there anybody you don't like?
Really?
Oh, there's plenty.
Besides Miller and Moulton.
Yeah, anybody, I mean, that's a great question.
I mean, we don't have enough time here. We're going to break here in about a minute. But
I mean, Trent, you weren't with us, but when Gruden was doing Monday Night Football, he loved everybody. And so we were doing a prayer. Mark, you watch Monday Night Football? And they'd be like, yeah, I love that guy. And I think we've got one of those,
we
Mark,
do.
Right now.
You know, I'm doing a lot of reflecting. You guys are making me overthink now. I don't really know if I dislike anyone.
There you go.
I don't know.
Exactly. You are you make Roy Cummings seem negative. You're so glass half full. Miller and Moulton. Oh, miss any part of the show, go to millerandmoulton.com to download it. Thanks for listening.